a guest today who was going to wear an eye patch, apparently going to wear an eye patch, but she's not. Tatiana.
Yes.
Another thing I learned about you, too, is that people accidentally say Tatiana instead of Tatiana. That's one of your pet peeves, right?
Yeah. Well, why don't still smile and, you know, but yeah.
But in your brain, you're like,
oh, gosh, yeah.
So frustrating.
Yeah.
So introduce yourself. Tatiana. Last name?
Tatiana Gavriluk.
See, I wasn't even going to attempt that.
I know. But I know there's so many vowels in that last name. Thank you. It's Ukrainian.
What do you do? So, who are you? Where are you from?
So I'm, by nationality, I'm Ukrainian, but I am an American, you know, I'm an American citizen living the dream, I guess.
In case anyone from the government's listening.
Right. I'm legal. Yeah. No, so blessed to have come here when I was 6 years old when my parents immigrated from Ukraine.
Okay.
And, you know, just life and you're learning a new language and all of that. And so, now I'm a realtor.
Yes, you are.
But between 6 years old and now, or back in Ukraine and now, you know, a lot has changed. But yeah, I became a real estate agent just like 5 years ago and, well, going on 6 years, and I love what I do. Love serving clients. I have a crazy passion for this. But I think it comes down to this, you know, me wanting to own a home one day and what the position we were in once.
Right. And that's exactly why we're together today. Because if you didn't know, you're watching or listening to MLO. We're going to do a really casual, which already, intro segue, which is untraditional to our recent episodes. Usually got the music banging, so I got to work that into the post edit here. But Tatiana's an amazing agent, not only listing agent, but buyer's agent. And today we're going to be jumping into, I think, fear of missing out or the fear of making that jump. And I love your story about how you and your husband first bought your very first home and started your family. And let's go into that. You know, when did you guys first start talking? Your husband's name is Paul, right?
Yes.
Paul.
Yes.
You and Paul.
Yes.
So let's rewind the tape because there's a lot of good stuff here in your story that I think people can relate to and want to hear it. And if you're a consumer out there looking to buy either first, second home, even your first Airbnb, and you're having those doubts or you're not sure, this story is going to be fantastic. And also, if you work in the industry, hang in, listen, and learn how to connect with your clients, because that's the difference maker from someone that's just in it in the short term or making a career out of things. So how far back are we rewinding the tape here on this story?
Oh, we can rewind as far back as we want, but
Well, how many years has it been now?
So, you know, looking back, though, at my life with, you know, just growing up as an immigrant, you know, my parents worked really hard to provide for us and to make a living. But what I think lacked, and not, you know, as a fault to them, but we were never kind of educated in, like, the financial aspect of just financial education. They don't teach
that happens here.
Yeah, they don't teach you that, really. You know, the importance of a credit score or the, you know, and so
just work, chop, stack. That's it,
you know, get a really good job. Well, and then from a woman's perspective in my culture, it's like, you know, get married, have kids.
That's
and,
top priority.
You know, and there's respect in that, but at the same time, you know, I was I got married a little later than a lot of my friends, actually, 24 to be exact. But
I think that's a good age.
It is. But all my friends were married, a lot of my friends, 90% of them, like 18, 19, you know? So kind of like, it's almost like I missed the boat. But anyways, I worked, got a job at Kaiser. And my parents taught me to like just save for your wedding one day and, you know, work. And that was about it. And so, anyways,
what were you doing at Kaiser?
I was doing payroll.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Riveting.
And I actually was blessed with a really good job. Ah. And so at that time, it was, you know, a really great position for me. And, you know, I liked it, but I grew out of it. And anyways, I met Paul. We got married. And my parents told us to buy a house.
And you guys are almost about to celebrate your 10-year.
Next summer.
Next year, coming up. Real quick. So parents are like, okay, great. You did step like, one. You got married.
You got married. Buy a house.
Now go buy a house.
2012.
Right, yeah.
And they're telling us to buy a house, and we're like, huh? We just got married.
Let's not forget, too, 08.
Yeah. All yeah. The crap. Yeah. Right? Okay. They were, I mean, we should have listened to them, but they didn't really go into why. It was just kind of like, and my parents bought in 08.
Right.
The height of the market. And all that they, I remember talking about, all I remember that they would say mm-hmm. to us or just say to each other, and I'm just hearing all of this, taking it in, is, you know, we made a mistake buying a house. And so that kind of sat with me, and I'm like, I'm not going to make a mistake. Well, years go by, and then, and I'll be completely transparent and vulnerable, you know, it's, life happens. And Paul and I were just, our income wasn't going up. And we had two kids now, all of a sudden, and we're $50,000 in debt.
Yeah.
And our credit scores, well, Paul didn't really even have an existing credit score. He didn't even have credit cards, you know. And but, like, we used ours together, and just life happened. And we're like, how did we get here?
Yeah.
And I wanted to buy a house so bad. I wanted us to become homeowners. And I just didn't know how that would, like, how are we going to make that happen? And so I'm like, working at Kaiser, listening to podcasts, listening to Dave Ramsey.
Yeah.
And, hey, let's do the snowball effect and let's pay off some debt, you know, but kind of got inspired to just, hey, what if I just get my real estate license? I don't want to sell homes. I don't want to help people sell buy homes. I just want to figure out how I'm going to buy a house one day. So I'm going to know everything on that contract.
Yeah. Okay.
That was like my mindset at that time.
You immersed yourself in the subject.
Yes. I didn't think I was capable of helping somebody buy a house, you know. I didn't believe in myself at that time either. And so I went ahead and started studying and got licensed. And then I'm like, okay. My first client, met him at an open house, and I absolutely fell in love with that process and helping them achieve a goal that I was desperately wanting to achieve myself. And so I even heard some people say that, heard through the grapevine, you know, of like people calling me, oh, she's like a shoemaker without shoes. Like, she doesn't even own her own house and she's selling homes to people. Like, what kind of real estate agent is that?
Who was saying that?
I heard from people like, oh, like, you know, so it was kind of discouraging, but I'm like, no, this is my goal and I'm going to go for it. And I surrounded myself around inspiring mentors, people in my life that just like said, no, you got this, you can do it. And
real estate was probably also a way for you to maybe tackle the debt.
Right. Yeah. Right. You know, so I use that as my why to like help other people, but also this is going to help me achieve my goal, you know? So, remember, so about like just actually a few months into getting into real estate, I was touring a neighborhood in Gresham.
Yeah.
And this house hits the market and I'm like, this would be so cool to buy this house. Like, I just love this house.
Okay.
And I bring my husband to the showing. Like, I have RMLS lockbox access. Let's just go see it. It was vacant, you know. We scheduled a showing and just for fun, I wanted to allow him to dream too.
So then
I'm like, what if we just try to get pre-approved? Where are we at? Like, I don't even know, like, where we're at.
When you showed Paul that first home, were you like, did you do the corny, like, okay, we have we got a 4-bedroom, 3-bath.
No.
1,700 square feet. Shoes off, please.
Yeah. No, I didn't,
There are cats, so.
No, I didn't do that. No. No, I was the Vanna White, like, here's the kitchen, honey.
Yeah. Imagine us here. Yeah. So did he buy it? Was he like,
He loved the house.
Yeah, what are we going
to
do?
But here's the thing. We went to our loan officer and said, hey, can we just like, can we run some numbers, what our monthly payment will look like? I think, but that was probably the most important thing we've done. Like that step to just see where we're at. So we were told, no, you can't buy this house.
You can't do it. Sure, there was a list of things like new job, debt to income ratio.
Right. Right.
But you did take that step, preferably in the Addynet MLO platform, you would have taken that step prior to viewing a home, but unique situation, right? You were the agent, not a key access.
So, yeah, so that step was like, no, you're not. Your credit score's here. Your debt to income ratio is out of whack. Yep. And so you can't buy this house. And that hurt. And I think through pain, we sometimes either we have two choices. Yeah. Either we take a step forward or back, and that's going to determine if we're going to make any progress.
I love that.
So we decided, hey, let's make some goals. Let's set some goals. I'm like the goal setter in our family. So with all due respect to Paul, he's a very like today and gets those action steps done. That's like, I think, his strength. I am very like long term. But
that's good balance.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. So we set some goals. We said goodbye to that house. Closed the book on that chapter and just started working away. And about a year and a half later.
So what was your plan?
So our plan was raise our credit score.
Yep.
We talked to our loan officer.
Yep.
What's our plan? What do we need to do to be able to be pre-approved one day? Okay, not this house. Fine. You know, but we want to become homeowners. Like, how much debt do we need to pay off? Do we need to close our credit card? Like, I knew nothing really at that time. And so, I shouldn't say nothing, you know, just,
sure, I get,
you know, there was a lot that you learn when you're actually doing it yourself. And so, we set some goals, and a year and a half later, we're like, oh, so I still had my job at Kaiser, and my hours were about to go down at Kaiser, and I knew that if we are not able to buy a house now before my hours go down, and that's going to lower our pre-approval, even if we are pre-approved, then if I have to use my real estate income, like I haven't made enough yet. As a realtor, you know, it takes more than 2 years to like get a substantial income to help you qualify for a home if it's just under that, you know. And at that time, I mean, I was just still new. So we decided to try to get our pre-approval. And I still had my, I still had my job at Kaiser. And I'm like, this is our time. Interest rates are at like 4.5 at that time.
Yep.
And I said, you know what? And you're hearing talk about the market might crash and all of that, you know, but I'm like, this is our time to buy a house.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try to time it with what the market's doing. I know that if we won't buy now, we're going to have to wait even longer. And we can't afford to do that either. Like, I saw the big picture. And so we decided to get our pre-approval, and we were pre-approved. And we start looking that day at homes. And that house that we looked at about a year and a half prior that we wanted to buy hits the market. Literally just goes active the day before. And we got so excited. We were up against six other offers on that house.
Yeah.
And up against a cash offer too. And we got our offer accepted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, yeah.
So one thing I want to extract from that story, this talk, is one of my biggest pet peeves when I see something on social media that's real estate driven and or an interview or whatnot, and it's this question. So-and-so realtor or lender, when is the best time to buy? And so and the response is, well, a year ago. I hate that answer. Yesterday, a year ago, some smart-ass remark. Here's the reality of the situation. The right time to buy is on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, when it's
not everyone has the same story.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone's has gift funds from their parents for a down payment. Not everyone has perfect credit or is debt-free.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own algorithm, but it starts with what you did is having that conversation on the plan of getting approved. Hey, we got to work on our credit. We might need to pay up some debt.
Right.
Maybe we use some of the money for a down payment, some of it for the debt. Yeah. Build out a strategy and go from there. Like, that is the first step.
It's life. Stuff happens. And it's okay to have these, you know, like problems. And you shouldn't be embarrassed to tell your lender, like, hey, this is our situation. Like, I know we probably can't afford right now, but hey, what's our plan? What does that look like?
Yeah.
And yeah.
So what did you go from rent payment to mortgage payment?
Oh, good question.
That's a big rip. It mentally is like, oh, I remember that going from, man, my wife and I, when we got our first place, we were, I think our first apartment was like $700 a month. Yeah. Then it jumped to $900. It was like the Portland rent jump. Yep. This is a tiny little one bedroom apartment, of which had arguably probably black mold in it. We don't know for sure. It was nothing to write home about. It was like imagine an Econo Lodge motel converted into apartments. That's kind of what it was like.
Oh,
really nasty.
Yeah.
But then they started doing some lipstick updates, yeah, jumped it to $1,200 a month. And it was like, that's it. Like,
oh, right away. We put that work into it. You start paying.
Yeah, you start paying big time. But yeah, we had gone in a short amount of time from $700 to then an option to stay at $1,200 or to buy and be having about a $1,600 a month.
It's a big payment jump.
This is a while ago.
Right, right. It's all...
But that's a big jump. And that was nerve-wracking. Nerve-wracking for us. So I'm curious, did you guys experience the same thing?
Yes. Well, we were paying actually a very low amount. We were renting from a friend. He was a very good friend of ours, and our landlord. And yeah, we were at $1,250, and then he raised it $50 to $1,300.
Oh my gosh!
No, it was awesome. Like, no, okay, but I think that's what prevented us from taking the leap, because we're so comfortable. And comfort is always, that's where it, you stay too comfortable for too long, you're gonna start to see the repercussions of it, I guess.
Yep.
And so, because
short-term ease for a long-term loss.
Yeah.
Because what'd you get by the house for?
So we bought, the house was $410,000.
And then now, what would it list for, conservatively speaking?
Around $550,000.
So you're looking
at the minimum
$140,000 in gained equity. There's no way you could save that.
No,
there's no way, unless you clone yourself and send it off to clone
a few times,
you know, and get a few extra jobs. That's a lot of equity gained. Yeah. But if you're renting,
you can't do that. And it was a mindset that we had to overcome, and going from $1,300 a month for rent to pretty much $2,900 a month.
You see, that is a pretty big...
It's a huge jump. Huge jump. For us, it was so scary. But you have to have the big picture. You have to see the big picture.
And that's what got you and Paul through the mental struggle of it?
Yes.
Big picture.
The big picture. And we knew that we were continuously paying off our debt. We didn't pay it off, all of it, at that time. It was enough to get us pre-approved. So the blessing with that was like, hey, we're gonna be okay. We're working towards increasing our incomes, so it's not like we're backpedaling. And so that's where the comfort came from, was that we're gonna make it. We're gonna be fine. A few years later, or a year and a half later, actually, we refinanced to an even lower interest rate, which got our payment down to, beautiful, now we're at like $2,200, which is less than what most people pay for rent.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think a super important thing to note about your strategy, not a lot of people know this. Say you're in a similar situation, you know, oh, we've got $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in just consumer debt, right?
Right.
So a lot of people make an excuse of having a home ownership conversation because of the guilt of carrying that debt. And they think that they got to tackle it all. Mm-hmm. I got to pay all this off.
You don't.
No, you don't. What you need to do is talk to a mortgage advisor, analyze based on your income, your credit, and your liabilities, they call it, right? Your debt accrued. What's the best use of liquidity, or how much money you have? Because guys, guess what? A mortgage advisor can structure, hey, this is how much you can get approved for if we don't pay any of that debt. This is what you can get approved for if you pay all of that debt.
Right.
And the beautiful thing about this process is you can actually pay the debt at closing, the closing of a purchase of a home, and you're not wasting your money.
You're not wasting it.
So maybe one house only requires you to pay off $10,000, right?
Right.
And the other house requires $15,000. If you went and spent $40,000 tackling that debt in 14 years, we've lost a lot of time, money, and energy. So that is one thing not a lot of people know, is you can pay it at closing. But do have that conversation with your lender and your agent. Put together a plan on the debt. sometimes we go no huddle. It's like, hey, I know we're going to have to pay something off here, but I will look at best bang for the dollar. $5,000 opens up this much buying power. It might be $75,000 in buying power comparatively to something else that might cost less, and you're only getting like $5,000 more. That's not a good use of payoffs, right?
No, no.
So these are things that I really encourage people not to be afraid of building a plan and tackling it. Last takeaway too, that someone, a financial advisor, taught me this. If you don't want to do anything, you're like, oh, I had a tattoo, and I was like, freaking, I can't do any of that. I just am overwhelmed, right?
Yeah.
Take your highest interest debt first and tackle that.
And tackle that first.
Yeah. Highest interest. That's where you're bleeding the most. So open up your accounts, have a real conversation with you and Microsoft Excel, and type it out. Debt one, balance, $5,000, 22%, 20, all these percentages, and just work it down that way. And there's a lot of great kind of transferring a balance options out there where people, you can slide over high interest rates to a zero APR.
I'm surprised how many people don't take advantage of that.
There is a fee. Like, normally they charge you per whatever $1,000 you transfer, there's a fee. But that's another thing you can chat through with an advisor.
Right.
And a mortgage professional is going to help you with. Sorry, I jumped in and slid a book on your shelf there. But so you're big good. Jump, good, massive, massive equity returns. That's
in 3 years.
In
3 years, yeah.
And talk to me a little bit more, though, about that payment jump, too, because I want to hear, how do you get used to it?
How do you get used to it? Well, budgeting is one thing.
Yeah.
We
you got to be real.
You
how
have
much
to
you're
be
making,
real.
How much it costs.
You have to have a plan, you know, and we did. We budgeted. Mm-hmm. We surrounded ourselves. We got some people in our circle where we're like, you know what? We need help. And the thing is, we used to be afraid to ask for help. And I think that's the most important thing that you can do. And even before you're ready to do something, like buy a house, get pre-approval, just ask for help.
Yeah.
Ask for a referral, for example. You know, hey, do you know somebody that can help me with this or that? And, it took us a while to get used to that payment. But I wouldn't say it wasn't anything like, you know, you find the means. It's kind of like having a baby. You know, you don't know how you're going to do it. You don't know how you're going to, raise this child, but you just do it, your instincts. And so when you end up with like a payment like that, like you were pre-approved, they looked at the numbers. That means we can do it. So we better figure it out. And it was just like cutting a lot of things out of our budget that weren't necessary. And yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of, I had one client where she was semi-retired, single, wanted to buy a small little condo, right?
Mm-hmm.
We go through the pre-approval process. She could get approved for enough of what she wanted, but guess what her new problem was? I don't like the payment. Right. This was many years ago. It was a much slower market, different. I was like, well, I'm going to offer this to you. How about we meet? This was pre-pandemic. People were meeting all the time.
Right.
We meet, and I can help you go through maybe where we could save some monthly costs for you. If you're open to it. I know that's a privacy thing. And she was like, oh, we had kind of become friends. Like, she felt like an aunt at the time.
Yeah.
So we meet. She brings all of her statements, old school style, right?
Yeah.
All of her statements. She's like, all right, Addy, go through them. So I go through with the highlighter, and I found $165 per month in excessive spending on monthly subscriptions that she didn't need anymore. You know those little, like, $4.99 a month, $6.99 a month. Okay, why is your Comcast internet bill at this? I know you could start a new contract and save $20 a month here.
Yeah.
Going through all those things, call your wireless company. Ask what you can do to adjust these things.
Mm-hmm.
Could we adjust our Starbucks drive-through by 17 roll-throughs a month to 4?
Right.
Right? And save literally $300 to $400 a month.
Right.
And Frappuccino is freaking expensive.
And back to your question about us getting used to that monthly payment,
right.
Something just clicked in me while you were talking, is that we were paying so much in monthly payments on our credit cards, and we paid off about 25% of our debt at that time when we purchased our house. And it was actually, we're like, well, we don't have those monthly payments anymore, but we're going to have this mortgage payment. We're already used to that kind of. We just had to adjust some things. Yeah. But we were mostly used to that monthly payment. But now we know we're actually investing into something. We're not just paying off consumer debt right. with 20% interest rate yeah. on it, on the card. So
it really... That is a really good exercise, going through and figure out where you can trim out. I think right now we're in a world that everyone wants, there's an economy of the monthly subscription, whether it's streaming service. Think about that. Apple TV, Apple Music, mm-hmm. HBO, Hulu, Hulu Live, Hulu, no ads, Disney Plus, Netflix. I mean, Paramount TV, Peacock. Like, you can keep talking about.
You can keep going.
So it's like, whoa, someone could accidentally have, you know, $100-$150 in streaming commitments, and that's a massive amount of buying power. We're talking $30,000 in home buying power.
In home buying power.
Relative to monthly payments. So think about that. That's a big one. I think the habits too, like coffee and food, like your consumer things, are something.
And if you can, and this is what I tell my clients, if you can try to start, like, you get a pre-approval, for example, and you know what about your monthly payment you're comfortable with, or you what kind of purchase price you want to buy, start putting that extra cash into a savings account and pretending like you're paying your monthly mortgage. I believe rent is going to continue to go up in the Portland metropolitan area. So, you know, it's just a matter of time where...
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, we can actually segue here with the... fear, because a lot of people are like, when is the right time to buy? You know, we had talked about it's per person. Some people, there's a lot of crash believers. Hey, I'm gonna wait for this to crash, and they're gonna try to time it. A conversation I had just today with someone with that perspective, I said, okay, paint me a picture, tell me a story that in 10 years renting will be cheaper and the house you're considering buying won't increase in value.
Silent.
And even if you, like, you can't even be like, well, the world gets hit with a pandemic. You can't even lead with that as the story, because we've seen huge appreciation in inflation during a pandemic. So what's your next story? The Walking Dead?
Like, right. Well, interest rates are going to go up. So then the market's going to crash. I mean, demand is so high, and that's what people don't see. And people who are purchasing homes right now, statistically, actually are putting more down, mm-hmm. you know, so they have skin in the game. And when, like, the 08 crash that happened, that kind of crash will never happen again.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, there's been a massive amount of regulatory changes and improvements to the financial process. It's
even $15,000, $20,000 into purchasing a home, you're gonna work hard to make sure you're gonna continue paying those payments so you don't lose that house. If you got a house with zero down, you didn't invest a penny into it.
Yeah.
What is, you know, of course. Yeah. So that's why lenders are putting these, you know, guidelines in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the guidelines are a lot stronger. I mean, you do have to have some sort of equity mm-hmm. position. I would say the biggest change, really, though, is the verification of employment. During that crash period, and we didn't even say we were going to talk about this today, but during that crash period, there was a very it was not regulated how your income was verified. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, there's guidelines, a minimum, you know, tenure at that job or within that industry, and we verify it by calling your employer, and there's payroll numbers and tax returns. Right. It literally used to be you could call a friend that you worked with and they'd vouch for you. I'm not joking.
That's crazy.
And there was a lot of fraud going on where people would give them the fake number. Oh, call Timmy. And Timmy is, no one knows where Timmy is. But Timmy's like,
Mars or Pluto? Good.
He makes $200,000 a year, easy. And it so all of that's changed. All of that's changed. But to bring it back together, I do want to address how we've seen a pretty big shift in the last 2 to 4 months, depending on what market you're in,
mm-hmm.
where it has cooled down a little bit. Most markets are on the turn of the season. It's December right now. But I feel like all the people that are selling and buying right now are a different breed. So most of it is, and this isn't bulletproof, nor is it, you know, trying to be negative, but all the buyers out there right now are the people that have the fear of missing out. They saw all this stuff. They didn't. They're kind of scared. They went up to the pool. No.
It's too cold.
Then they get back up. But no.
How about I just get my toes wet now?
Finally, you know, the real estate market and the professionals have time to make another call and check in and network. And like, this might be comfortable for me now. Right. Yeah. So those very wary and over analytical is a real buyer pool. And of course, everybody wants a deal.
And then the sellers who are.
You were just telling me about this.
Yeah, the sellers that are wanting the same outcome that they could have had in, like, you know, March, February. Like, well, my, you know, friend in this other neighborhood sold their house for X amount. I want this price per square foot too. And we have to look at the big picture.
Right.
We have to look at all the details, all the data. Otherwise, you're going to be in a pickle when it comes to either the appraisal or. You know, the buyer wanting to walk, like, there's so many moving parts.
Yeah, and you're getting all this tug and pull about frantic, wishy-washy buyer, and then sellers might or might not be orbiting around planet Earth of what their home really is worth. In the end, work with an agent that's going to shoot it to you straight. Hey, here are the values.
Right.
Hey, well, my house is an extra 500 square feet. Well, hey, reality check, that really doesn't constitute any value. I'm sorry. That's just, I've been doing business around here. This is how it is, right? You want a straight shooter and you want to list at an appropriate price. And that's sometimes is a big miss. And why you're seeing those price reductions, as I explained a few weeks ago.
Right.
It's like, oh, it's only going down. There's nothing wrong with it. It was just
improperly priced.
Yeah. That's a big one.
Yeah.
And then also, a note, something that I learned in when we bought our first home. For all those bargain dealers out there, understand that typically in real estate, this is a good lesson, typically in real estate, it's going to sell the way you bought it. So if you are one of those like bargain people, oh, I want this.
I want a good deal. I want $20,000 under asking price.
I don't care if it's on a busy street. I don't care if it's got, you know, ABC wrong with it. I'm getting a screaming deal. Look at the cost per whatever. You're going to have the same problem when you look to cash out and sell, and you're going to make the same concession that the sellers you're working with now are making for you. And you got to understand that, because I loved what you were saying. Yeah. You don't want to get someone in a home and then have this conversation.
I don't. Yeah. Right? I've told clients, this is not a good option with the goals that you've told me you have, because you're going to call me in 2-3 years, Tanya, we're ready to list this house, and thinking that you're going to have the same outcome as your neighbor or somebody in a different neighborhood possibly, and I'm going to be like, sorry. And you're going to be like, Tanya, why'd you sell this house to us? Right. I don't want them to ever say that to me.
And a little tip for everybody at home that might be working the internet. You get on Redfin, you get on Zillow, whatever it might be, right? Trying to find the home, the perfect place. Even when my wife sends me listings, right? First thing I do, I scroll down and I look at something called the tax and sales history.
Mm-hmm.
It shows on the listing when it was last sold, when it went to market, if it went off, pending, closed.
And
you can see it. It doesn't take, you know, a PhD to be like, oh, wow, that sat for 6 months.
And I have buyers questioning all the time. Why was that home withdrawn? Why was it on the market? And then it was for so many days and it still hasn't sold. And then they canceled the listing and then they went back on the market. I'm just
back and forth. You can see patterns of behavior on a property.
Right. And that history stays with the listing.
Yeah. There's this one house in Westland,
which
everyone who doesn't know Westland, it's kind of like a new money. There's mix between 600 on the really low upwards to $3 million homes. But it's listed for 1.6 mil. And it's been on the market for over a year. And you look back at its history, you're looking on it, and it's like, oh my God, 15 years ago, it listed, you know, 1.2 and it reduced 1.1, 1.9. 8, 7, 6,
it's like, how low can you go?
95. And well, it's still sitting though at 1.6. It started at like 1.9.
Right.
So that's like an example, like, oh my gosh, it's selling exactly the way they bought it. They got a screaming deal.
You have to, it's so important to price a property correctly.
Yeah.
Because I think of it this way, pricing too high, it's almost like going fishing and you're putting one fishing line into an ocean and you hope that you have somebody bite and then they bite. And then, I don't know, I don't know what it is. It's probably not even a fish. And that's what you got for dinner to eat.
Absolutely.
And then when, you know, if you price it too low, you have way too much to even look through. You just have to find the sweet spot. But it's like casting a net.
Yep.
And then you as a seller get to pick which buyer's the best.
Yeah. And I would say too, if you're selling, have that plan of like, okay, if after 10, 14 days, we're not making this happen, let's all be on the same page. Mm-hmm. Are we going to price reduce? Are we going to pull the cord?
Yeah.
I think all those things need to be
You have to know the data, like the current, like, hey, what's the current time in the market?
Yeah.
You know, are we in that time frame? Mm-hmm. Have we sat too long already? You know, but it is an opportunity for some buyers right now. You know, some homes that have been listed for a week or two.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, let's see what the seller will say. You know, it's an opportunity for the buyer. I think right now what we're feeling is almost like a breath of fresh air for buyers.
Right.
You know, they're not going to have to compete maybe against 10, 15 offers.
Right.
It might be 3, 4.
I agree. Just like a market update too. It's like, yeah, it went from same day, 24 to 36 hours on market.
Right.
To, yeah, okay, you can wait to the weekend to go see mm-hmm. that house. It might or might not be gone if someone gets super antsy.
Right.
But a lot of deadlines have moved into the traditional Monday deadline.
Yes.
Which we've been in a 2-year swing of end of Saturday, end of Sunday, which, gosh, that was exhausting.
How many weekends did you work this year?
Almost all of them, up right. to about September of this year. It's like, yeah. Well, I got my weekends back. I almost feel insecure when I don't get a call on a Saturday. I'm like, where are my agents, you know,
right.
telling me? But lastly, real quick, conclusion story. So I had this client friend in my neighborhood. They got super stubborn on their list price, wanted to go $650. Mm-hmm. The agent's like, it's not worth it. You're not going to get $650. We need a list at $625,
right?
625 puts you in a better position. It's fair market value. Then let the buyers constitute if it's going to go over asking.
Right.
We don't like that strategy. 650 or we don't have a deal. Mm-hmm. It's not worth moving for us. Okay, Colonel. Gotcha. All right,
fine.
So they list at 650. It sits for 17 days. No offers. So then the conversation comes up. What's price reduce? Let's go. Price reduce to 625, the original target sales price. Mm-hmm. They move it down to 625. Guess what happened? First weekend at 625. 4 offers all over 625. And the top bidding with 2 of them were over 650.
There you go. Bingo. They had
2 offers over the list price that's at for 17 days. So there is this, like, you have to think about it. Value it appropriately is almost a respect to borrowers.
Right.
Hey, I'm going to list it at the value that's appropriate.
Yes.
And then I'm going to justify, I'm going to take the overage off the demand. Mm-hmm. Not the opposite stubborn way. It's like, $650 makes it worth it. You're not selling something on eBay. This isn't a signed Ken Griffey Jr. card. This is a house, right?
I should probably be Etsy.
But I couldn't. Etsy, yeah, that's better.
Handmade.
People still do buy things on eBay.
Yes.
My neighbor buys everything on eBay. I'm like, do you not have Amazon? I'm an eBay man.
No.
I'm like, dude, you can like buy regular things on eBay. Did you know that? Like Amazon stuff.
I forget eBay still exists. I used to sell my kids' clothes on eBay. Anyway. Yeah.
Side hustle. See?
No, done with that.
Well, I'm just saying people out there,
right?
If you didn't know, eBay's still around. So yes. You can sell things on eBay and add to that savings.
Love the value we're providing here.
Anyways, spinning all around. Mm-hmm. I just think that was a great ending where it's like, man, we listed at 650 because they're stubborn. Got nothing. Then we reduced the original suggested sales price and got more than the 650.
Well, and the thing is, a lot of agents right now are educating their buyers, and then to that point, a lot of buyers are Googling information what they see on the media, what they're talking to their friends who have bought homes. Hey, we had to offer this much over asking. We had, so buyers are already under the perception, hey, we're going to be probably in a bidding war. And so if that property is listed too high, well, they're going to do their homework too. That agent is going to educate their buyer on, hey, this is, you can't offer more than that. You know, like, we're using data too. We're not just shooting numbers out of our, you know, heads or thin air. But yeah.
I love that you bring up the bidding war thing, because here's my newest spur. It's only called a bidding war when you're not understanding the game you're playing. You're bidding because you're undereducated on the process.
Mm-hmm.
You aren't being supported from a professional level with the lender and the agent. So it is a bidding war without strategy.
Right.
If you are working with people that understand the market,
left and right.
You've done your consult, yeah. You know your numbers, you know your strategy financially, yeah. And you stick to it. It's like, that's not a bidding war. It's like, great, I'm going to put in an offer.
Yeah.
There's a mental shift there.
Yeah.
The people that are inexperienced and working with people that really aren't supporting them, it's a bidding war because
how high do we have to climb to get this?
You've hired a Lyft driver to take you around.
No.
All right, let's see what happens. No. Great. Yeah, they get it. Welcome to the bidding war versus like, oh,
hey,
yeah.
Here's the strategy.
Here's the strategy.
Here's where we need to be. Here's the price that they put on the listing,
yeah.
But here's what this is worth. So this is what we'll need to offer.
Yep. That's and having your agent approach. Like you work with the listing agent and you have that conversation, mm-hmm. Right? It's like, okay, what's most important? What's the priority of the side?
There's so many questions.
What are their expectations? This, that. And the good conversations extract the needs, mm-hmm. And the bones for structuring the offer. That's a way better. There ain't no bidding war in that.
No.
That is just thinking it through.
It's the correct approach.
And it's a lot less
negotiating strategy, right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Any other closing notes? Because we're going to slide this out.
Oh.
Been good.
Covered a lot of topics here.
Yeah, I like your story. I really hope it's.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah. First time we met face to face, I'd only known you.
I'm glad you're glad I wasn't wearing an eye patch. You know, but no, it's so good to have a conversation with you. Honestly, I think about podcasts as like, you know, it's just people having a conversation, and all these people are just eavesdropping on it. You know.
Exactly.
It's,
and we do it live. There's
But it's valuable information.
It is.
So you provide a lot of value. I love your podcast.
Well, yeah. We appreciate the story and the value you brought today. And don't forget, everyone out there, if you're watching or listening, we do have that VIP number. Feel free to call or text at any point. We're here to help you. And even if you're not in my market, the network is very, very wide. So I know people from all across the country. I can connect with a lender and agent. Do not hesitate to hit me up. And of course, I always appreciate your attendance. So, and until next time, we will catch you later. All right.
Catch you later.